Okay. Well, these mics sound tremendous.
Good. Well, you've got the headphones on, so if it sounds good to you, then that's all that matters. I can't hear nothing except you just talking.
Well, I love the headphones, and I want to graduate up into like two people wearing headphones with like the mic that comes around front.
Sure, absolutely.
Because I'm a football coach, and that's what we do. Like, I feel like I'm, you know, game face on, and
so like podcast with all the football gear.
Oh my gosh.
So you feel like you're in the middle of a game competing.
Let's go. Absolutely.
It'd be interesting to know how you score when you're podcasting, but I'll let you come up with some ideas there.
It could just be randomly, like I will just stand up and scream, and you know, we'll run and jump and like you know, side shoulder bump.
Yeah.
I'll put a turnover chain on you.
That sounds I can cross over to seventh game NHL hockey. I got some ideas there, but
I'm guessing there's not turnover chains in NHL hockey.
No, I don't think I've seen that.
No.
I've seen like people throw octopus on the ice. Is that close?
I've seen that too. I love hockey. It's so weird.
Isn't it weird? Yeah. That's right. We walk around on blades and we throw octopus at each other.
Like Vikings were just, you know, kind of bored pillaging and we're like, what do we want to do?
That's right.
Let's put blades on our feet.
Bonus points. Yeah. Yeah. It's fun.
All right. So let's get into this. For those that haven't heard the first one, you lead a very unique nonprofit. And if you and I walked into the elevator and you were excited about talking to me and sharing this great mission you have, what would you tell me?
Well, I would say that if I didn't know you and we're just trying to make small talk, I'd probably try to figure out your story first. That's kind of been our MO around here. Mm-hmm. Depending on the context, of course, I'm not going to cold call you on that, but I'm going to ask you if you're a dad. I'm going to ask you if you've got kids. And then if you know, the relationship or the conversation goes deeper, I might just come out and say that, you know, I lead an organization that's committed to helping kids know they're not alone. And I think any parent or even non-parent gets that nobody wants to feel alone. And then go deeper into the fact that loneliness is often a byproduct of maybe a low-level mental illness. And I know we don't like to say that because mental illness is supposed to be the stuff that we read about in newspapers and the shootings and the people that hear voices. But mental illness is no different than, you know, physical illness when we have a cold. You know, we don't worry that we're going to need to see a specialist if we're coughing up phlegm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a cold. Mental illness can be as simple as stuck in a form of belief that no one cares. And that's a mental illness because people obviously care. There's a ton of folks out there that care. But mental illness works a way that says nobody cares. I'm not going to bother asking. I'm not going to bother telling because nobody would want to help me. So that's a long answer to your question, but we would start with your story. And I find that most people's story at some point connects with the greater meaning of, you know, whether we belong in this world. Do we feel welcome? Do we feel like people care about us?
Yeah, talking about mental health is a challenge.
It is.
You know, I went with a family member to see a therapist to just help them.
Mm-hmm.
And the therapist began asking me questions. And I was like, whoa.
Wait a minute.
And, you know, and all those things that were obvious to everyone else were not obvious to me at the time. Mm-hmm. And what was obvious to everyone else at the time was I was in the death cycle of depression that my family has a history. And if you're familiar with the upper Midwest, or I'm assuming Canada, you see this a lot, which is that long winter grinding alcoholism, suicide, that life.
Yeah.
You know, that just getting by life. And
it's gray skies, you know, there's a seasonal component to it, but there's also just a, you know, the Indy Star did an article that just said that this is a generation, or this is a people group here in Indiana that, conservative, we don't talk about certain things, and the problem is we should, because there's not a whole lot to do for a lot of the months of the year because of the weather and because of a lot of rural people. And we live in a pretty urban center compared to folks that, you know, live out in the country. And so I think if you live in the Midwest, you relate to this question: what's there to do?
Yeah.
And oftentimes what we get involved in doing makes our mental health worse because it usually involves a bottle or a drug or some escapism method that just leads to more brokenness.
Right. Sacrificing your long-term health for that short-term whatever.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
So your nonprofit today, could you describe it today in terms of number of people, how many people you serve, you know, some of those, you know, not a full board report,
sure.
Just give us the scope and size of what's going on here right now.
Well, on average, I think over the last 5 years, we've had generally in the ballpark of 15 to 20,000 clients. We call them clients because they each represent a real person with a real story. Of those 15 to 20,000, you know, we'll probably have conversations again. In the last 5 years, it's gone from a 40,000 conversations a year to last year, just under 60,000 conversations. So these are people that may be coming to us one time because of a Google search and finding a paid ad that Google grants us in their benevolent kindness, or it might be a young person who hears me speak in their school through the Get School Tour and feels like they want to courageously take the next step and start talking about what struggle they've got in their life. So yeah, it's ballpark about that number, and it sounds like a huge, huge amount of people, but I think what we don't often realize is, again, of the 300 million that live in the United States, and our target is the U.S., a lot more than 20,000 people struggle. So we're barely scratching the surface. There's a whole lot more need. There's a whole lot more more opportunity for us to help those that need the help. But again, we're still pretty new at this. We're just over 12 years old. And mental health, as you know, as we've just already discussed, has a stigma wrapped around it that's pretty thick. And so it'll be another 15 or 20 years before this, I think, becomes as mainstream as cancer. And, you know, we talk about cancer. We fight cancer. We wear pink. We put ribbons on the back of our cars. We get football players that, you know, wear pink uniforms. Like, things that we would have never thought would have happened now are happening. So I think mental health is going to end up there sooner or later. But we got to keep talking like we're doing here today.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's an interesting, you know, question of how could this ministry 10x, you know, how does it scale up to the level of the vision that you have? And, you know, I don't know if there's an answer for that now, but I'm interested to see how that happens.
Well, I used to dream crazy dreams that we would be, you know, and all joking aside, that we would be a household name, you know, that we'd be known as the, because crisis text line, which is the more popular one now, that Huffington Post pushes and CNN pushes, it's pretty well known within the world of mental health that if you're struggling, text crisis, crisis text line. We don't get as much love because we believe that there's a God that created us. We believe that there's more to life than just gathering stuff. We believe that there's a purpose, and it comes from someone who made us. So people see us before even knowing us that we're religious, and we're probably haters, and we're probably judgmental, and we don't like gay people, and all the stereotypes often that come with being a Christian. I can say that none of those things are true of us, but so we don't get a lot of love from that, so we don't get the mainstream acceptance. But I think we're just a celebrity away, you know. Article away, or just an incident away, where I think we could get thrust into a pretty big pond pretty quickly. And that's what I've always wanted. But on the practical side of running a nonprofit, you know, there's a capacity, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of organizations that have come and gone that wanted the big stuff, wanted the big show, didn't have the capacity, and therefore they burned out pretty quickly. And, you know, we've only got 40 paid staff here chatting with kids, which sounds like a huge army. But, you know, when you're talking to one person every hour that has a suicide plan, empathy burnout is pretty high. This isn't, you know, we don't have the mission here that makes it fun with a capital F to work here. This is tough slugging. We do this because we care. We do this because we have a passion. We have a burden. I would rather continue to grow at a healthy rate, at a smart rate with best practices. As we develop funding strategies that allow us to grow our team, then we can start getting more ambitious to get more clients in the door. But we're actually in a bit of a lull right now with chat volume because of the summer. Mm-hmm. School's out, our program's shut down for the summer. And we're noticing that. So it's kind of a good thing because we need the break mentally. Mm-hmm. We need the break from a wellness perspective. And but once August hits and school gets back in session, it'll get busy again.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. And in the future, I'd love to get your thoughts on this also. I just listened to Dr. Nate Lau, who I worked for once, talk about those seasons and those burnout. And it was on the Burned In Teacher podcast, and he spoke really well about the, I hope I'm remembering right, the run hard, rest well.
Oh, yeah, group. Brenda. Mm-hmm. Brenda Jenks. We've helped her a lot in this room that you and I are sitting right now with video resources, and we've as a staff been through it, but Sabbath is so key.
Sabbath is key. And that's a tremendous mission they have, because so many people that work in mental health, it grinds you up. Mm. I did that for years at a group home year round, working thirds, teaching during the day, and the stories, the hurt, the pain those kids go through that have been done to them and they've done to each other. If you're burning at both ends and you are in some kind of mental health work or in education, you're working with people that are struggling, your capacity is finite. Mm-hmm. Your capacity is limited. And I can't encourage you enough to move ahead with self-care.
Yeah. Well, I would say it even more bluntly that I've seen so many people jump into this with excitement and hope and passion, and they're their own worst enemy because they not only don't last because of the their own breakdowns of giving more than they get, but they become bitter and they're actually no good to anybody because they're themselves just exhausted. And it breaks my heart because there's a youthfulness that I look for in people we hire here, but self-care is so key to make sure that they, when they're getting into their 50s like I'm about to do, that they still want to get out of bed in the morning and do what we do. And so you're absolutely right. We do have to take care of ourselves in any capacity, in any job we do. But when you're pouring out, you got to make sure your tanks are full. And we use the metaphor around here and even in my own family that, you've got to have people, things, stuff, activities pouring into you. Mm-hmm. Because pretty soon you'll have an empty love tank and you're no good to yourself,
Yeah, I think one of my, I have this this giant backpack called List of Regrets, and one of them is...
It's an unusual name for a backpack.
Right. List of Regrets backpack. I don't know. Maybe it's a suitcase now.
Yeah.
I don't know. An attaché case. Maybe it's getting smaller. But one of the regrets is going through that burnout. And going through that bitterness of the burnout, bitterness at ministry, bitterness at people that let you down. Mm-hmm. And then you're just grinding up relationships and you're burning bridges and, losing friends and those kind of things. And, if we're really honest about that, one of the more challenging things is to get through the other side of that, become restored, and then be at the place of like, well, what do I do with that wreckage?
Yeah.
With those people.
Yeah.
And that's a challenge. I have a dear close friend right now that's given me the ghost treatment for quite a while. And, I'm hoping that we can reconnect, but what would you say to somebody in that position?
Well, I was hoping you'd ask, cause as you're sharing it, I just thought, the best way for me to be is a straight line, right? So just to say through whatever medium he's letting you, use, whether it's a text message or a voicemail, just to say, look, it hurts me too much not to be right with you. And I don't know that we can be friends again, and I'm going to give you control of that opportunity, but I sure want to be right with you. And so can we get together and work on that? I've had to say that double digit times over my lifetime. One of the first experiences I had after getting my life right with my Creator is going and seeking forgiveness for all the people I'd sold dope to, people that I'd manipulated and hurt, girls I treated like they were nothing more than meat, and asked them to forgive me for that. Now, I didn't understand all that at the time. I was still a 20-something, but it was probably the most formative 2 years of my life to understand, you know, just how important it is that we get right with folks. And I've screwed up since, you know, we do. I was mean to my wife last night as I changed the garbage disposal at 11 o'clock at night and had to make sure that we were right before we fell asleep. But I would just do the straight line. Then you know that you don't have that regret that you didn't, you know. Political correctness is a virus. You know, we think, oh, I shouldn't call him, or I shouldn't say something because I don't want to offend him. You know, it's offensive to live a life accidentally. You know, let's do everything we can to reconcile, because if you two do reconcile, your friendship will be stronger than ever. If it doesn't, at least you know you have the peace of mind that you manned up and did the right thing.
I think Zig Ziglar called it being a meaningful specific instead of a wandering generality.
That's good. No, I like that. I'll steal that for sure.
Can't go wrong with Zig.
Yeah, no, Zig's good. His wisdom will go on for years to come.
It's so homey. Like I just want to be able to drop like a few one-liners that are that homey, you know, that folksy.
Sure.
You know, with great wisdom. But so if we stripped away 80% of your role here, mm-hmm. and what would you say the most important 20%? We're going to Pareto principle this. What's the most important 20% of what you do?
I think for us here at Remedy, and I don't know that everyone would agree down the hall, because everyone likes getting paid, you know, and that's my job, is to write grants, ask for donations. But I think it's actually not that. I think it's innovation. Mm-hmm. I think the most important 20% is that I and a team of people dared to dream a what if. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the business model that all entrepreneurs get excited about, is the what if. Mm-hmm. I've heard recently, and I think it was a radio commercial, that, you know, not only do a lot of new businesses fail, but they fail because the entrepreneur has dollar signs in their eyes and they want to make big money versus they actually care about the customer and the product they're selling. And I think that's where we got it right, is we started with the care and the client. Mm-hmm. And then we started coming up with some really unique methods on how to reach people and how to help people. And so I think the innovation side of what I do is the most important. You could replace me, and it's pretty easy to replace me. You could replace me with another person that's a good fundraiser, and another person who's far more eloquent and good looking and likable. But if they just maintain the mission, I think it'll be a pretty dry, extinct place here in a few years, because vision leaks. And when vision is cast, people want to dare a crazy dream. And I think that's what the Remedy story is. This started out as a radio thing because that's what we knew. And yet, as we started to see the symptoms of a generation that would be sharing their secret struggles through technology, we decided, what if? And here we are still saying that, you know. You've been part of our school assemblies. Those are very unique. What if? Mm-hmm. Now I'm talking about how can I go into a business and do something different to get them talking about mental health? What if? You know, I don't know what the next thing is. I'm not there. I'm still trying to get this business thing figured out. But I think that's the thing I think I uniquely bring, and I hope I never change. I hope I'm 90 years. I hope I'm Zig Ziglar and still what ifing.
Talking about the redhead. That's like he always references his wife as the redhead.
That's right. That's
which I always
right.
thought was key. You know?
Thank you for bringing that memory back. I haven't thought of that for a long time. But yeah, he always talks about the redhead.
Well, I have a few thoughts on that. I used to be a format trainer, and we would sort of group kids by their driving question. And some were why kids, and those often seem as anti-authority, but if you can answer the why question, why we're doing this, they're right, they're on board. And then there was the what kids, just tell me what I need to know. And then there was the how kids, like I want to get hands-on and I want to get after it. And I, and probably you, are if kids. So we'll sit through all that and do all that, but we synthesize. We start connecting dots. We want to create new things.
Yeah.
And that what if question is tremendously powerful, because nonprofit leaders that I know that have truly innovative nonprofits are really into that question. And they have other people that support them or around them that help or totally take on the fundraising to an extent, you know, the grant writing. There's a real technical side of grant writing that is painful for creative people. And it's, if you're not familiar with that nonprofit world, it's like having an audit to get money. It's,
yeah.
Yeah. It's brutal sometimes, not all the time, but it's just, you know, and it should be that way. It should be due diligence and, yeah. You know, your partners want to make sure you're doing everything correctly. But there are those times when it's, you know, 3 a.m. and you're that creative person and you're grinding on that application. Like, can I just come and tell you all the great stuff we're doing?
No, you're absolutely right. Yeah. And the limits are 500 characters or less. Tell us this. And like, are you kidding me? I can relate to that for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wouldn't be too hard on yourself. You're a good looking guy. If this was on YouTube, now, if we were on YouTube, this would be the Beauty and the Beast show.
Oh, my.
That's Jeepers. Definitely what it'd be.
Don't make me blush.
So that's interesting that, you know, it's about innovation, and you're right, because these are innovative things you've made, mm-hmm. you know, Soul Medics and not you, but you, I mean, you definitely had the vision and got the people and the team around to build these things out. What were some ways God showed up, clearly involved, clearly blessing?
Well, the biggest ways that I think I would say, and my wife would say, is just the funding, you know, mm-hmm. It does not make sense that we are able to raise $1 million every year. That doesn't make sense. Our clients are, you know, kids your son's age. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if Connor's dropped you a $50,000 check lately, but it's hard to imagine that we're able to keep this organization going based on our clients being 13 to 24-year-olds. Mm-hmm. And actually, just to be very frank, you know, less than 1% of our clients donate to Remedy Live. So, so the fact that there's been an ability to be able to see funding come in, whether it is the grants, whether it's the donors, whether it's, you know, people that, I get a privilege to meet that are interested in investing in this thing. That's the greatest way that we see God show up. And I know that sounds trite because, you know, we watch, you know, the different, you know, reality shows that, you know, have, you know, money exchanging hands back to the Apprentice show and then mm-hmm. Undercover Boss, and they give these I think we don't realize just how hard it is to raise money. It's easier, again, to get, you know, $20 in 20 minutes, but it's still hard to get the $20. However, next, I think I've seen God show up just through lives saved. You know, I think we've talked about this, Jason, but when you have a young person come up to you and tell you about the rope or the knife or the mm-hmm. the gun or whatever method they're choosing to plan out in their head that's going to end their very life. I know there's been a few times in my existence where I've had no doubt in my mind there's a creator God. The one day was when I gave my life to him because I knew that I had hit rock bottom and there had to be something. And then the second was each of my children's birth and hearing their heartbeat during the ultrasound. And then now as someone that leads this organization, it's when someone comes up to you and places their future in your hands and tells you the way they want to end their life. And then watch them out of that confession, get help, get hope, and then get healthy. And then be part of this great opportunity to tell others about their redemptive baggage, that this is something I struggled with. Confession helped me get it out. And now I'm telling you so that you don't feel like you're alone, because there is hope, but it takes, we got to get that hairball out. You know, that hairball mm-hmm. blocks the pipe and it smells bad and it looks bad. And we hate pulling it out because it's just, ugh. But once it's out and it's thrown away, free flow, great things can happen. So yeah, I think those are the ways I've seen God work. Now, there's tons of small things. I break down in tears all the time. I spoke at a camp last week, and I'm with a bunch of kids that are my son's age. And when I watch these kids get it, that their life is more than mm-hmm. the latest pair of Nikes and trying to find a pair of headphones that will make them look cool. When they get it and they start treating each other with kindness and we can fight some of the hatefulness we see in the world, you know, I still break down in tears because I think God's in the midst of that. He's the one who's good. I'm just trying to point to him and say, I'm a road sign saying, hey, look at this. We're created to be like this.
The moon reflecting the sun.
Yeah.
I totally get that.
There you go.
Tell me about your personal commitments. I'm sure that you have a lot pulling at you. And temptation and all kinds of things going on.
Well, those are two very different questions. My wife and I just talked about this last night in our walk. We're involved in our church. We teach parents a lot about how to be engaged in your kids' lives and not just be a roommate. We do a lot of that. And then marriages are also a big passion for us. So we're doing a marriage conference, another marriage conference this year where we're last year we had 100 people show up, which we were shocked by because we thought it was just going to be a few of us hanging out. But there's a lot of marriages struggling and people, again, courageously wanting to get their marriage better. So that's pulled us in a bunch of different directions because just like a nonprofit, it requires faith and it requires funding and it requires vision. And we don't want to be soloists in this endeavor, so we want to get people around us to help us lead the thing. And then I'm a parent like you are. So I've got four wonderful kids that all have their own dreams and aspirations as they dip their toe in the river of life. So they're trying to figure out what they want to do with athletics and art and drama and theater. And so those things all pull me in a different direction. And I'm you may know this. I think we've talked about this. I'm an introvert. People don't believe that because they probably heard me on a stage or seen me talk about something in a group. But I'm only able to do that because I'm an introvert. You know, I have to go into my cave and charge the batteries up, mm-hmm. and then I can come out and be a better me. But if I don't self-care and hibernate on a daily basis, then I'm really no good to anybody. Even what we're doing right now. Luckily, after this, I have a 20-minute drive to my next appointment, and that will be the recharge. Because although I love you and I love doing what we're doing right now, it just exhausts me to do it. And so I need to be careful because when I get exhausted, then I am more susceptible to the temptations and to the, I'm an angry person, mm-hmm. you know. I use my anger by day, you know, kind of like, you know, Bruce Wayne. You know, I want to do the right thing, but by night I'm Batman and I'm taking some pretty angry steps to try to fight crime. Sometimes my family gets affected by that. So I try to be very careful with my boundaries and mm-hmm. making sure that I'm not running over that love tank that we talked about earlier, making sure that it's full. And sometimes being full means watching a sporting event because for me that charges my batteries. Sometimes it's going for a walk, which has been my late MO lately, is walking a half hour a day. It's changed my life physically, but also changed my life emotionally. So, yeah, there's a bunch of other things, but those are the main things I'm passionate about outside of what I do here at Remedy. And, of course, my kids, doing as much as I can, loving on them.
Right. Thanks for hanging out with us today.
Yeah, absolutely. Good to be with you.